If 2020 didn't already have enough competing news headlines, let's add one more to the mix. This year's hurricane season is already an extremely active one, with several swirling storms forming in the Atlantic in just the last few weeks. While hurricane seasons wax and wane, these natural disasters have been ever-present throughout history. Prominent explorer Christopher Columbus even encountered one on his travels to the New World and survived to tell the tale thanks to the warnings given to him by locals.
The natives told him about certain things to keep an eye out for as a hurricane approaches, and one was a brick red or red sky in the morning. Another one is long, deep oceanic swells hitting the shore, high cirrus clouds. I'm sure they told him about how animals often act differently. They didn't know low pressure systems, but when hurricanes roll in, animals can sense that the pressure is going down, and they often act differently or in a way to protect themselves from the coming storm.
That's Eric J. Dolan, researcher, writer, and author of Furious Sky: The 500-Year History of America's Hurricanes. Dolan says that during Columbus's fourth voyage in 1502, it's documented that the explorer crossed paths with a great storm.
He was expressly told by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella to avoid Hispaniola and Santo Domingo because he had a bad reputation there, and he actually had been sent away a few years before in chains for a lot of the things that he had done during his time in Hispaniola. So he's supposed to avoid Santo Domingo. Well, he goes across the ocean with his four ships, and he realizes that the signs that the natives told him about are there, and he's worried that a great storm is coming. So he wanted to go into the harbor of Santo Domingo to protect his ships, and also he was very concerned about the treasure fleet that was going to be sent out by Governor Ovando back to Spain, 28 ships with all the treasure that Spain had looted, essentially, from Central and South America. And Governor Ovando didn't like Columbus, didn't want him to come in, didn't believe in his prediction that there was this great hurricane coming, even when Columbus told him that if you let this fleet go and the hurricane comes, many of those ships might be destroyed.
Faced with no refuge on land, Columbus and his fleet were forced to get back on their ships and take shelter in the water along the coast.
The hurricane rolls in, sinks almost all of the ships. Only three survive. Many people go to the bottom of the ocean and are killed. But one ship that made it through and actually kept sailing to Spain was the ship that had Columbus's gold and silver on board, the Aguja. So one of the other ships went back and told Governor Ovando what happened to his treasure fleet. And he was, of course, bereft, angry, but he claimed that Columbus was a sorcerer of some sort because he had not only predicted this hurricane, but that somehow he had brought down this hurricane to get revenge against his enemies. But really what it was is he was just a very skilled mariner, and he was somebody who listened to what he learned from the locals who had experienced hurricanes for centuries.
Thankfully, today we no longer rely on the color of the sky and the sounds of squawking birds as the telltale signs of a hurricane rolling in. While there's still a lot we don't know about the weather, data from past storms over the past 170 years help paint a clearer picture for scientists. Today, experts, with the help of weather satellites, planes, and other tech, are able to closely monitor the path and shifting intensity of each hurricane and warn at-risk residents several days before landfall. At the end of August, Category 4 Hurricane Laura gripped the nation as it hit Louisiana with sustained winds of 150 miles per hour, earning the title as one of the strongest storms to ever reach the state's coast.
This is the most powerful hurricane to hit for about 164 years. You have to go back to the Isle Dernier hurricane in the mid-1850s to get one with as much of a powerful punch as Hurricane Laura. And when I started watching the coverage and the continued heightening of alarm, I grew quite concerned for the people who are in the path of the hurricane. And having written about so many hurricanes, I realized that many of those people will be coming back to a life utterly changed.
The 80,000 residents of Lake Charles are now in this position. Located in southwest Louisiana, the town was in the direct path of Hurricane Laura, as the storm's record winds destroyed buildings, decimated electric lines, and unearthed massive trees. Officials estimate that it could cost as much as $12 billion to repair the wreckage throughout the state. Dr. Barry Keim is one of the scientists who traveled to Lake Charles to scout out the storm's aftermath. Keim is a professor in the Department of Geography and Anthropology at Louisiana State University and also serves as the Louisiana State climatologist. He studies extreme weather events with a focus on hurricanes, heavy rainfall, and storm surges.
Lake Charles is on the right-hand side of the storm in that right front quadrant where the, you know, the strongest winds are located. And the reason for that is that you have the winds that are spinning around the center of the low-pressure system in the hurricane, and it is additive with the translation speed of the storm itself. And the storm was moving at a forward velocity of about 20 miles per hour through this neck of the woods. So that 20 miles an hour gets added on to the rotational velocity around the low pressure, and you get really high winds in that quadrant. There were gusts of wind measured in Lake Charles over 130 miles an hour. And the city, I mean, it was way worse than I ever imagined. The amount of wind damage there is staggering, is the best way to put it. And it's literally going to take years for this place to recover. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Sadly, peak hurricane season still has weeks left. Typically, the prime window for severe storms is between the end of August to early October each year. Looking at the broader picture, Keim points out that we've been in a more active hurricane period for decades now.
Most years since 1995 have been hyperactive, and what I mean by that is having, you know, more total storms per season than the long-term average. There's only been a few exceptions, and those have been El Nino years. El Ninos tend to create a very hostile upper air environment. We don't get as many storms during El Ninos than otherwise.
Back in 2017, you may remember an especially hyperactive year with two big storms, Hurricanes Irma and Harvey, barreling into the U.S. coast, while a third hurricane, Maria, devastated Puerto Rico. It was one of the worst seasons on record, with widespread flooding and damage to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. Rewind even further back to 2005, when a Category 5 storm, Hurricane Katrina, hit the city of New Orleans with a huge storm surge that broke the city's levees.
Hurricane Katrina was a Category 5, 18 hours before landfall. It had 175-mile-an-hour sustained winds. It basically built up a Category 5 surge that just annihilated the coast of Louisiana and Mississippi. It had a 28-foot surge on the coast of Mississippi by Bay St. Louis and past Christiane. That's the largest surge ever measured in the Western Hemisphere. But the storm actually weakened before it made landfall. It was a Category 3 at landfall. But note, it was a Category 5 18 hours before landfall. And it just basically just built up this Cat 5 surge and then put it on the coast, even though it weakened before it hit the coast.
Dolan labels Katrina as one of the biggest failures in government response and meteorological forecasting in modern history.
The federal government, through FEMA, has a responsibility to help coordinate disaster response, provide numerous things, basically help people get up off the ground after a hurricane has come by, and also help them deal with the immediate impact by giving them shelter, coordinating food and water. And FEMA back then had been starved of resources by various presidential administrations and did essentially a very poor job of dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and preparing right before it made landfall. So if you take away funding from the Federal Emergency Management Administration and take away funding from other organizations, state and regional, that are there specifically to help with hurricane relief, the inevitable result is that you're not going to be in as good of a position to help people deal with this disaster.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency, known as FEMA, is already stretched thin this year due to the pandemic and other natural disasters sweeping the country. Earlier last month, President Trump issued an executive order to extend COVID-19 unemployment benefits while covering the costs by reallocating up to $44 billion from FEMA's Federal Disaster Relief Fund.
We will see how well regional, state, local authorities respond and how well the federal government helps oversee the disaster response. So at the end of this year, we'll be in a position to say, did the federal government do a good job or a bad job in helping people deal with hurricanes?
In the event of any extreme weather or natural disaster, whether it's a hurricane, wildfire, or something else, it's important to closely monitor the developing situation and evacuate from the area when told to do so. In the end, houses, cars, and other valuables can be replaced, but lost lives cannot. To learn more about hurricanes, how you can help with relief efforts, and our guests, Eric J. Dolan and Dr. Barry Keim, visit viewpointsradio.org. Dolan's book, Furious Sky, The 500-Year History of America's Hurricanes, is available now online and in bookstores. For more behind the scenes, check out Viewpoints Radio on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. I'm Gary Price.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Attention all women who have been diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Johnson & Johnson's baby powder and shower-to-shower talcum products have been linked to ovarian cancer. In February and May 2016, Johnson & Johnson was ordered to pay $72 million and $55 million by two juries to two women who contracted ovarian cancer after years of using talcum baby powder products. If you or a family member has been diagnosed with ovarian cancer and used talcum powder prior to the diagnosis, call Talcum Powder Help Now today at 800-833-0398. You may be entitled to substantial compensation. The consultation is free and you'll pay nothing unless there is a recovery in your favor. Don't fight this alone. If you or a loved one used talcum baby powder-based products before being diagnosed or died from ovarian cancer, call Talcum Powder Help now at 800-833-0398. 800-833-0398. 800-833-0398.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Viewpoints is a production of MediaTrax Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows. And find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Coming up on Viewpoints.
There's exactly one generation of students in the United States that have gone to school during a pandemic, and it's the students who were in our classrooms last spring.
The challenges of returning back to learning once again. Then,
we'll just go sit at a bar and talk to the bartenders because they know so many of the neighborhood secrets.
The unseen gems in each town and city across the country. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.